Anyway, my name is Joe Gallia. I'm one of the owners and president of Member Solutions, and I'm here today with Ali Alberigo, who's a member of our advisory team, has done consulting for us for many, many years, and just recently was one of our lead speakers at the business boot camp that we had in Pennsylvania, which was a huge success. Got a lot of tremendous feedback on your seminar, Ali, so we really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. I'm honored. I appreciate that as well.
And, you know, from time to time, we do these webinars and try to come up with different subjects. And, of course, you've done probably more of these than anyone else in our history. So each time we have an opportunity, I know that we try to think of, you know, new things to do. And I thought we came up with an interesting subject for today, the psychology of a martial arts teacher. And, I kind of gave that some thought prior to the call. I was thinking, you know, every profession kind of has a different mental state, you know, things that you have to prepare for. And, you know, you think of doctors who have to go into surgery and teachers that have to deal with varying ages of children on a day-to-day basis and, you know, just all these different things. And, you know, no one's really ever talked about the martial artist before. So kind of excited about the topic. And, you know, for people that are on the call that haven't been on before, you know, we'll start off with some basic things just to kind of get some information about you out there. But you've been doing the martial arts for 40-plus years?
Yes, 42 years this year.
That's amazing.
It's crazy, yeah. I can't imagine.
That makes you a little older than me.
Yeah, I'm 45 this year. I just turned 45 in February, actually. So it's that was pretty pretty interesting. Never ever in my life, or I'm sure you thought that too, would we ever be 45 or 40 years old? You just look back and you go like, where did all the time go?
I'm gonna be 43 next Friday. So
yeah.
I mean, I know where you're coming from, and it's amazing how fast time flies. And you have you have a daughter, and I have kids,
mm-hmm.
and it seems to accelerate with them in your life, doesn't it?
Absolutely, without a doubt. And, you know, it's funny. It's like when you look at when we were younger and we looked at 45-year-olds, I thought they were ancient. Now, I don't think it's the same. I think the perception of age is a little bit different than when we were younger of people. But nowadays, you know, the midlife is 50 years old, you know, so it's interesting to see how that has shifted as well.
Well, I'm all for that, and I'm sure that when we're on the phone – when we're in the 50s, we'll be thinking, you know, that 60 seems to be the middle age today.
Yeah, we hope so, right?
Well, you know, you were, I guess, around 3 years old, so this is kind of, I guess, a funny question, but to ask you, you know, how you got involved in the martial arts.
Well, that's interesting because, you know what, it is a great question because it goes towards a philosophy that we could teach to the parents in our schools, you know, when we're actually talking about that, where my parents, my dad was a retired police officer in Nassau County. He is a retired police officer. And at the time, you know, the 70s or, you know, it was 1968 when I got started. It was a different era where police officers were, you know, were not respected. They were, you know, people, my friends or kids in the school were making fun of me. And, you know, they used the word and threw it around a lot, like the word pig and, you know, things like that. Where my dad said, hey, listen, if you're going to be the son of a police officer, I'm going to want you to defend yourself. And my mom came from Malta. As you know, you're Maltese as well. And, you know, she really never had martial arts, but she wanted me to be able to defend myself and have confidence. So, you know, hence they enrolled me in the first, I believe, franchise martial arts school, which is Jerome Mackey, back in the 60s.
Wow. Well, you know, getting started at such a young age obviously is critical, you know, for just children learn at such an accelerated pace, and I see that even with my kids. They pick up on things so much quicker than I do. But what is unique is how long you've stuck with it. I mean, you know, what do you think about that? I mean, 42 years, that's
yeah,
a long
you know,
time.
I wonder myself sometimes. I really do. Like, I think, like, I'm still doing this. And you know what's interesting? It's I think, well, first off, one thing I wanted to comment on is that when I was that little, I had a cousin who was my mentor. And he was a pretty affluent martial artist and famous martial artist at the time. His name is Bobby Ring. But back in the 70s, you know, he was into the whole Bruce Lee era. He actually was in a bunch of stunts in an old, well, the guy's still around, is Sonny Chiba. And he used to do all these, like, you know, B-rated, you know, martial art movies. So every time he came to visit, he brought me a new pair of nunchucks or throwing stars, and he was always trying to motivate me to become a martial artist. So that was great to have him in my corner. But you know what the interesting thing is, and as an adult, I could say I stuck with it for one reason, but and I'll go into that in a second. But when I was little, I stuck with it because my parents didn't give me an option. And nowadays, I think most parents are looking for their kids to shine in something, something that's an innate talent. For instance, they put them in soccer and they play soccer, and if they're not good, they pull them out of that and put them into horseback riding or baseball or football, and we're constantly searching for our kids to shine. Back in the day, when I was younger, they didn't really have Little League football or soccer, wasn't even a thought, you know, so my parents said, you know what, you're going to do martial arts. They never asked me whether I liked it. They brought me after school directly to my program in the martial arts. They didn't give me a choice or an option, and I did it. And then I was about like 14 years old before I realized that I had an option later on when I was a little bit older where I could have quit. And they asked me, you know, you don't have to do this anymore. I think they got tired of paying for it. And they finally they just said that, and I go, this is all I've been doing. I don't know anything else. You know, and it was a part of who I was. So that's why. This is my identity. I believe that I ask my students this question all the time. I say, are you a martial artist or do you do the martial arts? Most of the time, they don't understand my question. But the question is it who you are or is it something that you do? And that's really what that's all about.
And that's very interesting to think of it in that way. And I understand what you're getting at. And I talk to a lot of people and, you know, the school owners, you know, they're going to fall under. That's who they are. You know, they can't imagine ever – you know, giving it up. It's just it's something they do all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the distinction, right? If you look at your students and you can categorize them in that way, hey, right, who have we made into a martial artist and who is just doing it as an activity?
Right.
And what are some of the things? And I guess that'll go into a little bit of the psychology of a teacher. But
mm-hmm.
let me ask you, I mean, we joke around a lot because, you know, you practice ninjutsu and all the, you know, is Ali really here? Because we don't
right,
see
right.
him, that kind of a thing.
Exactly.
But, you know, what I know that you've trained in multiple styles, and maybe you can just share the differences in your background and what you've
yeah.
learned over the years.
Well, I love it. I mean, I first started off in Jerome Mackey, which was probably the first mix of martial arts, which was kind of a kung fu slash karate slash judo and jujitsu system. And so I had a blend of that. And then my cousin simultaneously taught me in the art of Aikido. So I received my first black belt. I was 7 years old under the Jerome Mackey, which they considered a junior black belt. And it wasn't really a real black belt. It's like what we consider junior black belts in our school. It's a real black belt, but it's, you know, it's on a different level of understanding. And then I got a second-degree black belt under my cousin through him in Aikido. And he trained through the Hambu Dojo in Japan, the headquarters school there. Then I went on to Chinese Hawaiian Kempo. I had a second-degree black belt in that. And then I did Filipino Arnis with Chuhan Chris Sayak. And he's one of my teachers that I still love to this day. And I got what would be considered a second-degree black belt if it was equivalent to, like, a karate system. And then I went on to American Ninjutsu through Shion Felix Vasquez, and I earned a fourth Dan under him, training for almost 13 years with him, and still consider him my teacher. We actually speak on the phone almost once a week still. And then I went to Japan. Upon his request, Shion Vasquez, he says, you know, I want you to go out and expand. And I started traveling to Japan in 1991, had 17 trips to Japan, lived there for as little as 3 weeks, as long as 5 weeks at a clip, and trained with a Japanese master in Japan, earning a fifth-degree black belt in jujitsu and ninjutsu under him, plus all the different various weapon arts.
How do you think that's impacted on you as an instructor? I mean, we're talking about psychology. You know, having that experience abroad, you know, has that been a major influencer for you? Do you see things differently than maybe people that haven't made those types of trips?
Well, yeah, to some extent, and no on another. But let me be clear on what I mean by that. Like, there, when I went to Japan, you know, it was almost like this. You know, when we look forward to a movie that's going to come out, and before we have it, you know, actually seen it, we get the preview and we build up this imagination. I remember when Batman, the new one, came out. I mean, I was so excited for it. Thank goodness the movie was so good. I loved it. But there's been movies that I've gone to that in my imagination I built it up so much that there is no way that movie could have ever lived up to my vivid imagination, so I'm disappointed. So when I went to Japan, I had built up the Hollywood version, the Mr. Miyagi, the Karate Kid, you know, all the ancient movies that I've seen, et cetera, et cetera. And when I went there, it wasn't a letdown, but it certainly wasn't what I had built up in my mind. But I learned so much, and I was living in a small village in Japan with my teacher, training three times a day, and it was a great experience. But most certainly watching the Japanese and how they conduct business, and also seeing how people perceive the Japanese, or, you know, especially I can only speak for myself in my instructor, it was different because, you know, everyone, it doesn't matter if you're, you know, if you're Oriental, you could, you know, or Japanese, let's say, people will trust your legitimacy. But as an American, you have to continuously prove yourself because, you know, just for that reason, you don't have a Japanese background. So in other words, any Japanese teacher in Japan, whether they have real quality instruction or they're great, they could claim to be anything that they want. And I found that the Japanese in Japan didn't really, the actual people didn't really look at the martial arts like we did. You know, I went over there thinking that it was going to be this great mystical, you know, training experience. And most of the Japanese children and people could care less. It was a very small segment of the population in Japan. They didn't put a value on the black belt like we put in our black belt in the United States. To them, the black belt was just the beginning. You know, you were just, you know, if you were first degree black belt, it's like we consider yellow belts in our school. When I have a black belt in my school, they have trained for 7 years. I mean, they've been through rigorous training. You could literally get a black belt in some styles in less than a year in Japan or Korea by traveling abroad. So it's quite interesting the difference in how we perceive that black belt here compared to the way they do there.
That's interesting. I did not know that, and I probably would be a little guilty of, you know, the preconceived notions.
Yeah.
You know, obviously from the movies. I've never been to Japan, and it's one of the places that is on my, you know, life checklist. And,
sure.
And our school, where my kids go, they study Shaolin Kung Fu, and the instructor does a trip to China, and I think that's something that we'll probably do. And I wonder how that would compare in terms of all the different Asian cultures. Would
right.
it be similar to Japan, or is it different there? I mean, I have no idea. That's
yeah.
A good point.
You know, it's hard to say. I've never been to China, but I've been to Thailand. I've been, you know, to Japan. You know, quick stop over in Korea. Never really got to train there, spend much time there. But you know, I'm probably almost positive that it would be very similar with respect that, you know, we think like Japan, wow, that, you know, everyone over there is doing martial arts. You know, I mean, at least from a martial art point of view. And to some extent, they do it in gym class. They're forced to train in kendo or naginata or judo in school. But most of them, they just have no interest. I mean, I'll give you an example. In my teacher school in Japan, the students that were training were all from different cultures, not from Japan. If he had 15 students from Japan that trained, that was a lot. So, I mean, most of them were from Ireland and England and, you know, the UK of some sort, or whether it be from, you know, Iran or Israel. They were all traveling abroad to train with this ninja master. But the people within their own vicinity, they didn't really care about it.
So, you know, what you made me think of is the fact that, you know, here in the United States, not everybody plays baseball. But baseball
right.
is, you know, American sport. And not everybody
right.
plays hockey in Canada. But
yes.
would you say, you know, but still, a lot of kids do play hockey in Canada, and a
right,
lot of kids
right.
do play baseball here.
Right.
Martial arts is not that way in Japan?
Oh, it's not. Absolutely not. I mean, you know, people would ask me what I was doing in Japan, because in this particular farm village, they knew that if you're an American or a Caucasian of some sort in that town, you were there to train in ninjutsu, because there was no other reason for you to be there.
Right.
And, you know, the Japanese are funny. I mean, they don't really assimilate like we do in our country. For example, you know, other than, you know, every phone call you make or every sign you see, it's either in English or Spanish, right? In Japan, they make really literally no effort to adjust to other cultures. For example, if something's written in English, it's spelled incorrectly. You know, they make no effort to make it. They show you by spelling it incorrectly that it's not really a concern of theirs. You either become or understand Japanese, or you're going to have a hard time getting around. So, you know, it's not that, you know, in our country, we try to help and appeal to as many different cultures as possible. Japan, they're showing you that they're very proud about their culture, and you have to go there and understand it, or else you're not going to be a part of it. And there's no real change. Very rarely do you get a TV show in English or a channel in English. It's just very unique with that perspective.
Well, that would make for interesting, you know, dinners and
yeah,
just
exactly.
getting around in general.
Yeah.
So let me go back a little bit. You know, you've been taking martial arts and practicing for 42 years. And at what age did you start teaching?
I started teaching around 14 years old. I was in the Filipino martial arts school with Chris Sayoc, and by the age of 16, he handed me the keys and walked away. He basically said, "You're doing a great job here. It's your school." And he left me there. And for about another year and a half, I ended up running that school. No business experience. I had no clue whatsoever on how to market. None of that stuff even came into play. And then I got tired of actually being a school owner. I wanted to be a student, and that's when I started training in the art of ninjutsu. But, so I started teaching. I had a large amount of experience from, like, 14 to 17. Then I joined my instructor school, and with a short amount of time, Shion Vasquez had me teaching on the floor and helping out and so on and so forth. So it was quite interesting how my life always kind of fell back into the teacher role. And I started my school, the one that I have now, in 1991. So it's 19 years that we've been running this location.
Wow. Well, you know, anyone who's been around as long as you have seen, a great deal of change in our industry.
Yeah.
I've been around since late 80s, and
right. That
is so dramatically different to it is today. And you have a lot of 70s and early 80s experience on top
right. Of
all that.
Right, right.
So, you know, from a psychology perspective, I mean, there's obviously the time is going to impact, but also the person, the age of the person, you know?
Right,
I mean,
right.
A young person today is going to see things very differently than the young person that you were back then.
Right.
So, you know, why don't you discuss a little bit about it? Because I think that interests me in terms of your views there.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. The trends in the industry are quite amazing. Since I would say, like, maybe 85, 88, where I think that's when the industry itself, the martial art industry, started to become a professionalized industry. Before that, there were only handfuls of people that ran schools successfully and were able to teach and actually make a living out of it. If not, before that, it was pretty much you did it because you loved it and you didn't expect to be poor if you did it for a living. And if you didn't do it for a living, you had a full-time job and you taught it the way you were taught by your teacher and you did not expect to run it commercially and make a living out of it. So it shifted from the 70s, early 80s to that kind of professional industry now that it is today, where martial artists all over the world are making a living, a good living, some of them becoming millionaires at the martial arts. And the whole mentality has changed quite dramatically when it comes to teaching with that perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I totally see where you mean, and it's interesting too, because some instructors got left behind during the change. You know,
right. Things
changed, but they didn't.
Right.
My very very first instructor was extremely, I mean, he was a bona fide martial artist, very strict.
Right.
You know, there was a tremendous amount of rules. You did stuff outside of the school. You know,
right.
Knuckle push-ups on concrete
yep.
was fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's just a different, it's just a totally different mentality. Where do you think we're going?
Well, you know what's interesting? What you just said to me, I'm reading a book right now. I'm trying to think of the topic, but pretty much everybody probably knows about the guy. And I think it's called The Last, I don't have it in front of me, but it's The Last Interview or The Last Survey. It's about that guy that was on Oprah that had only like 6 months to live, and it was his last seminar, and he taught people how to live their life, and it was so touching. But anyway, I'm reading it, and he was talking about his first football coach. And the football coach was like brutal to the kids, but he says that nowadays, if this coach was still teaching, he'd probably be brought up on charges. But he changed more people's lives by the way he taught, and he didn't baby kids. You know, he gave an example where they had a game, and at halftime, the kids were playing really terribly, and at the halftime, they ran over to run to the water cooler, and the coach ran to the cooler and threw it on the floor and dumped all the water on the floor. And he said that, "You're more concerned with the water than you are winning, and you're embarrassing me." And he said if that was done in this day and age, boy, people would have been on the phone with their attorneys, they would have been pulling kids out. And, you know, it's kind of interesting at how we have that. I just had a mom in my school that literally was crying hysterical. She was almost without curse words cursing me out because her little boy didn't get a stripe with the other two kids in the class that day. And my instructor that was teaching the class basically had just said to her, he needs a little bit more work. And the next day she was like a panther in a cage, you know, pacing the floor. And I mean, she started crying, made a big deal in front of all the other parents. I actually was talking to the little boy, got down on one knee because he was upset, and I explained to him why it's not a big deal. The mom grabbed him by the hand. She says, you're not talking to my son anymore. Walked out of my lobby. It was a big to-do all over a stripe. And the very next day, the kid practiced his technique, and we gave him the stripe. But they were so caught up in it. And that would have never happened in my teacher's school. He would have kicked them out of the school. He would have yelled at them, threatened them. It just would never have happened. And the industry has shifted where we're coddling people. I think just in general, our population, we want the most for our kids, but we don't realize that sometimes we have to be hard on them.
Well, doesn't this cycle back to what you said in the very beginning of this call about your parents and, you know, the fact that, you know, there really wasn't a choice or an option
right
there.
Absolutely.
And I think a lot of the things that our clients have to deal with is, you know, it's the psychology of the parent and
right
how they behave with
right
their kids. I mean, look,
right,
you know, I'm a parent and I have two kids who are in martial arts and we're, you know, an hour away from a professional school, so
mm-hmm
they go once a week. And I'd
right
love to see them go twice, but they get a class and they get a private lesson afterwards, so I kind of hope that that's, you know, enough for them. And, you know, on one hand, it's good because they're getting exposure on a consistent basis and all that stuff, but because they're not going twice a week, you know, I always worry about, well, geez, you know, are they going to not be as committed? And they've, you know, they're like regular kids. They've,
yeah,
you know, they get to the point where, oh, geez, you know, do we have to go today?
Right.
And my wife and I, before she was even pregnant, we knew
right
our kids were going to be martial artists.
Right.
And there
right
were going to be ups and downs. But the regular parent doesn't think that way, and it's hard for them because how are they supposed to know that it's different?
Well, you know, this is a great thing. And when I thought of this, you know, the idea of a sensei, you know what brought it up is when I spoke at the boot camp where, you know, I was kind of cracking some jokes about how – and I spoke about this mom that I just talked about with you right now at the convention – And people were hysterical. I mean, they were laughing, and they you know, it's like I had the comedy relief right there. And the reason why they laughed was because it's real to them every day, just like it is for me. It doesn't matter whether we have a school in Canada, Australia, New York. We live this every day with the modern parent. And it's unfortunate that we could do so much more if parents would allow us to do our job. I mean, I'm not saying that every instructor is capable of this, because there are a lot of bad instructors out there, and there are a lot of really amazing instructors out there. But at the same time, always being second-guessed by a parent, and granted, you know, parents got to do that because they have to protect their children. But when you trust in someone, if for example, I took my kid and I found a guitar instructor, and I said, I want you to teach my child. And they said, okay. And after every lesson, I then pounded the instructor saying, this doesn't make sense to me. Why does he have to do this? Does he have to do these scales? I don't believe in it. And this is what parents do to us on a regular basis. They're constantly second-guessing everything that we do, trying to coerce us into doing it the way they want. And this has destroyed, in my opinion, the martial arts in general. And now with the going into a business frame of mind, in order to be commercially successful, we have to appease to the parents somewhat. And I've found many school owners will just do whatever the parent wants because they don't want to lose the student because they have to pay a rent. They have to pay employees. They want to make a good living. So what's happening is that the martial arts is slowly deteriorating from what I consider traditional martial arts, not saying traditional techniques or Japanese and bowing a certain way, but the value systems that are taught in the martial arts are slowly deteriorating. Where I've heard consultants say, well, I don't want my kid to call me, the students to call me sensei, call me Joe or Hank or don't wear a uniform. What's the sense of having a belt? You know, that stuff is all ancient. Going like, it's almost like taking the cheese and sauce away from pizza and still calling it pizza. And if you don't have cheese and sauce, it's nothing more than just dough. And we need to make sure, funny enough, the word dough in Japanese is the way, right? And we need to show the way so that our students can follow. And I believe that parents and adults or kids that are training are in search of direction. you know this in the industry, many martial arts schools are teaching, and they have no direction. That's why they come to me as a consultant. That's why they try to go to seminars, because they don't know. They've really never had anyone leading them and saying, this is the right way to follow. And it's just like being a parent. You never got a manual. No one ever taught you how to be a good parent. So it's almost like, you know, it's a trial and error. Hopefully the trial and error turns that kid into a great productive citizen, but that's why prisons are filled throughout the world, because people never had direction on how to be correct parents, or as well as not being great, great instructors. Does that make sense?
It does. So, you know, so let me ask you this then. You know, if you're focusing, and this is something that I know that you do well, and you've talked about this in seminars and such, but how do you separate out what you need to do as a business, which is, of course, catering to the customer, which in
right.
this case may not be the student, but rather the parent, and how do you maintain the traditional aspect and still be successful?
Well, you know, again, you know, using the word traditional in a loose way, tradition could vary from school to school. I mean, it could just mean at how you bow. So just to be clear, if I'm going to use the word tradition in the context of our conversation, I'm going to call tradition the spiritual values that are taught in a martial arts school. Tradition as like martial art techniques that are taught that are you know, viable in the street for self-defense, and the mental and physical aspects of the training. And I think that that's being lost. Especially, I've done some debating with a prominent consultant, and we've done some debates online where about the MMA. And I feel that, you know, I love the MMA. Most of my good friends are MMA fighters, like, you know, a Kung Lee or a Frank Shamrock or a Dan Severin and guys like that. But I think that just going in and learning how to fight and learning the techniques of the art without those spiritual lessons and those value systems that are tied into it, those trials and tribulations, the theory of giving back in order to get, you know, like service before self, that's what I consider traditional martial arts. And that's being lost on a regular basis. You don't need to sacrifice. You can. I've had a very, very successful school teaching ancient values. I mean, of course, I altered them slightly from some of the people who teach in Japan, but I haven't sold out, so to speak, and I still teach what I believe to be a very classical, traditional school. And as you know, I've made millions at doing it, and I hadn't had to sell out or change or give up on the values and the ideals that I teach. So I don't think that there is a give or take. I just think it's being a professional business person in one aspect and not selling out on who you are and communicating to the client what's expected of them.
Well, and that's the real challenge, I guess, for people is when they get caught in the middle and maybe they don't stake their claim as to which side they're going to take and then just,
right.
you know, and just do that. What do you find to be the other difficulties that martial arts instructors have today?
Oh, there's so many. I mean, I could, you know, it's funny. I just went out to breakfast with two of my buddies, and the first 2 hours of the meeting was all about a particular thing that we're doing business-wise. The next hour was just complaining to each other about what we deal with on a regular basis. It's almost like we are each other's psychologists. You know, hey, did you know Mrs. Smith? I can't believe she did that. And you believe this happened with that guy? And it's all the same. It's just a different school. But I think that a lot of struggles have to do with dealing with the identity of who you are. For example, if I'm known as a traditional school and I'm known that when people come in my door, if you ask me for a belt and hassle me about a belt and I'm going to kick you out, we develop a culture of people who don't really care about that aspect. You know, they're not going to be begging for a belt and just caring about belts. So we have to develop a culture, our brand identity of who we are right up front. I think that a lot of times people are searching. You know, quite frankly, you know, one day they're doing cardio, the next day they're doing MMA, and whatever the next fad that comes up, they're going to do that next because they think that that's what's going to bring them business. When I believe, you know, you have to establish your brand identity, and of course it has to be commercially sellable. Once you establish it, then you go out and you promote it in that way. For example, McDonald's, they don't claim to be a 5-star restaurant, never did, never will, yet they're making billions and billions of dollars every year. And everyone pretty much looks at that and says, is this junk food? Is it not? It's a quick fix. But yet they're selling it every day because they branded themselves as that particular product, and now they go out and they sell it. And that's exactly, you know, what it is. I know 5-star restaurants will do the same. But you can't be all over the board, you know. And if you are, you basically have a secret identity, I call it, or a lost identity. And, you know, you're not going to ever really succeed that way.
And I think parents want their kids to go to a good school,
right,
to get, you know, a bona fide martial arts education.
Right.
But part of the branding is educating them.
Absolutely. That's
right?
The key,
I mean,
right?
That's really what it's all about. I mean, you know, when you go into a McDonald's, you know that you're not getting a five-star meal. You know
right,
what you're
exactly.
getting because they've taught you as to what to expect from when you walk through those doors.
Right, right.
So that, you know, so I think it's a phenomenal point. I want to, because we're getting closer, you know, closer to the end here,
mm-hmm.
I want to just remind our clients that are on the web listening to the streaming audio that they have the opportunity to post some questions, which, you know, I'll always try to get to those. And those that are on the phone, I'll definitely allow some time for you guys to ask some questions or even comment on some of the things that we're talking about
right.
today. But I just want to get this reminder so everyone can start thinking and typing and all that kind of stuff.
Great.
You know, what do you do when students quit? And I don't mean, you know, well, the guy quit, he's gone.
Right.
You're talking about the process of, you know, this person's kind of on the way out, what's
right.
happening there with that relationship, and what do you do when people actually come to you and actually request that they
yeah.
quit or cancel,
well,
that kind of thing?
Well, you know what's interesting? It's like the instructors out there know exactly what I'm saying because they teach on a regular basis. This is like our child. You know, our martial arts school is like our child. We love it to death. We love the art, and we want to give it to as many people as possible, so we hold it dear to our hearts. With that being said, it's personal to us. You know, so years ago, I'll give you an example. If a person left and they quit, you know, most of the time, by the way, people quit and they never ever give you the time of day. They won't even answer your phone calls. They'll duck down behind counters in supermarkets if you run into each other. I think it's because they're embarrassed to some extent and they just don't know how to handle a breakup. You know, very difficult in marriages are to divorce and still be friends, or divorce and have a very, amicable relationship. And the toughest thing is to separate without ending up hating each other, because people conjure up strength through anger. So in other words, they quit. They know that it's their fault, but they want to blame you. It's because you did a boring class. It's because the workouts are too hard. It's because you pushed me too much. It's because you asked me too much. You try to, you know, there's always in their head a justification to some extent. Now, years ago, when a person quit, it could take me 4 or 5 months to get over it. I mean, there were some nights that I wouldn't sleep, and I'd ask myself questions and go, how could they do that? I gave them my entire heart and soul. I mean, there were kids that were literally like my children. They were in my dojo 6-7 days a week, 3-4 hours a night, and at the snap of a finger, they were gone, and they wouldn't even return a call, and I'd never hear from them again. And that affected me emotionally. It put stress on my marriage. I mean, I'd come home, and all I'd do would talk about it and complain, and my wife at the time would say, come on, can't we just talk about us? Or whatever. So martial artists carry around a big burden, and I feel bad for most school owners. Over the years of the last 18 years, I've been hurt so much that nowadays if someone quits, it takes me about a day, if that, to get over it. And I'm done with it. It's not that I've become hardened or cold to it. It's just that I've learned to understand it's part of our industry. If I'm going to continue being a martial art teacher, I have to understand that people are going to quit. They're going to love me today, hate me tomorrow. They're going to call me bad names, or they might, you know, or I might never hear from them again. All of these things become a part of what I do, and I accept that as a job. Just like a police officer accepts that he's dealing with the dreads of the earth. They're, you know, he's arresting people and drug addicts. He's dealing with it. That's why a lot of police officers become very cynical about life, because all they see every day is the bad side of it. So, you know, that's why nowadays I'll just quickly end this and then you could ask me that question, is that I've learned to understand that this is the psychology of people, and as an instructor, I've learned to tolerate it. And this is what I quite often, what I talk to with my friends, and you know, we kind of counsel each other on how to handle this stuff, because it does emotionally affect us.
Well, you know, the martial arts instructor has personal relationships,
right?
And I think that's you know, that's probably an important thing to talk about a little bit, because here the owner is interacting with members, with students, with parents on a day-to-day basis. You said before you put your heart and soul into teaching someone. We know that the hardest period of time is the first 3-6 months of a brand new student, because
right.
you know, everything is built on the basics, and they got to learn the basics, and they have nothing
yeah.
they have nothing to build on the basics of the, other than the basics themselves.
Right.
So it takes a while for the students, and you build up these relationships. And, you know, I think that there's always that danger point also between 3 to 6 months where people do the most of their quitting. So you give them your investment, and then, you know, once it gets a little too difficult, you know, people leave. So what do school owners do, right, or instructors do? They might simplify the instruction so that, you know, the person can get past this, you know, this period of time.
This speed bump, I call it.
Yeah, and it becomes challenging. It's frustrating because it's a very personal investment that the instructor makes, because I think that people feel they need to make that in order to be successful in the classroom, and I agree with that.
Right. Well, you know what's interesting? And I agree with you 100%. And there's two things I would say without going into a whole other business seminar, which I've done seminars on this exact topic, is that we have to communicate to the parents better. We have to communicate to our students better. In other words, we have to open up a can of worms. In fact, it's on a consulting article that I wrote called Opening Up a Can of Worms for you guys. And it's like telling let's pretend you joined my school, never did martial arts ever, and I come to you and you sign up and we're all done with that. I've got you locked in, so to speak. You're coming in, you're training, and you're paying, and I'm all good. And most of the instructors step back and hope for the best. I then step in and say, hey, Joe, you're doing a great job. How you doing? You love it? Oh, yeah, I love it. This is the best thing I've ever done. And I said, well, that's fantastic, but I also want to talk to you about negative stuff. I want to open up this can of worms and say, you know, when you're feeling frustrated, this is what you do. When you're getting burnt out, this is what you do. Or if it's for your kid, when your kid says, I'm bored, this is what you do. And then I open up this can of worms so that they're prepared with a toolbox of tools to be able to counter that. In other words, you know, people go to the gym in the beginning of January with all these great, you know, goals, and then their muscles start getting sore. Some of them get sick because their bodies run down, because they're doing things they haven't done ever, and then they quit because they're burnt, or they're quitting because they don't like this feeling. If they had someone there to nurture them through or tell them ahead of time what to expect, then they would be in a much better position. And that's what I think we have to do, is we have to educate our clientele better to get past those roadblocks, those speed bumps, so to speak, so that we have a much more successful retention ratio than most school owners are doing. They're not paying enough attention to the educational process of the students, whether it be a parent or a child or an adult.
So with that, obviously there's a lot happening there, not only with the student but also with the parents. Are you also preparing them in advance? Because, look, you said it before, and I hear it all the time, is that, you know, parents are given a hard time about spell testing.
Mm-hmm.
There's tuition questions about how come things cost this much, or why isn't testing included? So how do you deal with those situations, and how can you maybe even, you know, use some of the psychology?
I put it on the table from day number one, and I talk about all of this stuff. Then we have a process, and now we're getting into kind of a business psychology of the 2, 4, 6, 8, 10-week calls, and then the 5-month call. We're continually calling up and reminding them. Even in my school, once people, before they get their belt, they have to fill out a questionnaire, and the questionnaire is not really so much a questionnaire. It's probably 50% questions, 50% pre-framing, saying stuff like, are you aware that we do not charge for testing? Are you aware that we do have a black belt club? Are you aware that we do special seminars and special private lessons? So that my students are constantly hearing this stuff, so in turn we're educating and training and building a culture within our school. With that being said, does everyone hear it? No. There's that old ancient, you know, Japanese proverb or saying that says, you know, when the student's ready, the teacher will appear, or, you know, sometimes people are listening, they're just not hearing you. So we have to work as hard as we can to educate those clients. But unfortunately, going back to that old mentality where I've been hurt by some of my best people, I mean, I've had a 13-year student that I literally raised him. He had some problems in college. He had some, you know, issues where he got kicked out of college. I took him on as a student, raised him like my son. He met his wife in my school, had children in my school. I paid him $78,000 a year for Christmas once, bought him a car. He had 4 weeks vacation, an IRA, and then he went out and quit, gave me 1 week's notice, and then a year and a half later tried to steal all my students by stealing my database and mailing to my clients, and it did some damage to my school. I had to actually sue him in court with my non-compete letter and have a TRO. So you ask yourself how – and it really hurt. You know, this was someone that I trusted that would come to my Christmas parties, that I would – you know, I was in his wedding party. And I say to myself, how could a person do this to you? It doesn't matter how mad you get at someone. Even if I was a jerk and I got really – and I did some stupid stuff, you'd never – for all the good things I did, you wouldn't try to hurt your instructor. At least I wouldn't. But people do that continuously to me, and I say that there's a word in – I believe it's the Indian culture, and the word is fasil. One of my students' names was fasil, and that means the line between good and evil. You're always walking that line, and you lose your balance, and you step in one direction. You could be the worst instructor in the world. The next day, you're treated like God. And I find it to be unique at how quickly, at the snap of a finger, someone could turn on you. And this is what instructors deal with on a regular basis, why I wanted to bring up this philosophy and psychology of a teacher, because it is not an easy job. Think about this. If you were a school teacher, you would literally have a student for 8 months and then they move on. You never see them again other than high and by in the hallway and you've done your job. But a sensei, if you retain your students for 7, 8, 9 years, you get them a black belt, you've literally worn, let's say they started at 5 years old and now they're 14, you've worn like 10 different hats. You were the goofy kid and instructor, then you were the seer, now you're guiding them through the teenage years, and now you're a mentor, and you've literally given your heart and soul to these people. And at the snap of a finger, they could disappear and never call you again, never say hi to you again. I have it happen to me all the time. So what do you do? Rather than being depressed like some instructors, and I used to get sad over this, I learned to tolerate it. And I have to tell you, there's still nights that I don't sleep when I think about so-and-so who's now training with another instructor after I've, you know, given them 8 years of my life, or they quit and they never talk to you again. You wonder, like, what did I do wrong? What happened? But you have to realize that this is the part of the industry that's it's a little sad, but this is what we do. If we don't want this, we have to get out of it.
And I guess you have to be thinking about it in terms of, you know, for the way you run your business and you know, the classes that you offer and the brand and all these different things we've talked about, that really you're going to have a certain percentage of people that come and go. You have a certain percentage of people that last a long time and maybe stay with you forever. And, of course, unfortunately, that's the smallest percentage. And then there's this, you know, big group where you're going to really, you know, you're going to make an impact on their lives because they're going to train long enough to do that. And they're going to go off to college, or they're going to move someplace else and they're going to take with them. So, you know, I guess your major point is you got to start really focusing in on the positive stuff and not let the negative stuff bring you down. It's going to, but focus more on the positive.
Yeah, and you know what? You teach the ones that are there, and the ones that aren't, you can't worry about so much. I mean, and this is not from a business perspective, because we have all these systems in place, of course, to retain students and keep them going. But from a psychology of an instructor, you have to realize that you're in the moment every day, and you're teaching those people and the ones that take the lessons. And you never know. I'll give you an example. I had an email probably about 6 or 7 months ago that I got from a student of mine who is this kind of goofy kid who really never had any direction. And when he got older and he was a young man, he was always in search of religion, and he never could understand what religion, whether he was a Buddhist or a Catholic and all this other stuff. Anyway, I got an email from him not too long ago, and it was a really unbelievably powerful email. It said, you know, literally I've changed his life in my martial arts, and now he flies Black Hawk helicopters in Iraq. And he said to me that my martial art has saved his life a number of times, but he didn't say physically. Not, it wasn't about my ninjutsu techniques. It was about him, you know, thinking under pressure, the stress of being on a tarmac in 110-degree weather, to always be under a stressful situation, sitting in a foxhole and dealing with these wolf spiders that they deal with over there. And he said that what I've taught him, the stress levels that I put him through in my class, has made him deal with the stuff that he deals with on a daily basis now like nothing. And he said that that's what has made his life better, so that I've impacted him there. And I have stories like that are endless, but I don't hear the stories. I hear the complaints more so, or the bad things much more often than I hear the positive things. So I have to remind myself. Quite often, if I get an email, I print it like that, and I keep it in a little folder. And there are days that I'm just feeling down, and I read these emails to remind me of why I do what I do on a daily basis, or else I would have quit years ago, because it's really quite you know, it's a selfish job. You know, teaching martial arts is selfless. I mean, you don't do it because you're going to get the kudos and the recognition. You do it because you love teaching, or else you'd quit, because people, they hurt you quite often, and you know, there are a lot of frustrations. But that's not why we do what we do.
Right, and you know, and that's awesome, by the way. I mean, that's, wow, what an amazing type of thing to get from a student. So
yeah.
Congratulations on that.
Well, thank you.
That's awesome. And you know, and you make another point that I definitely want to accentuate is the fact that the negative stuff, you're going to hear that because people are more likely to bring a complaint out there than they are about a positive thing.
Right.
But, you know, and when you have an extreme – I mean, look at how long it took this person, right? I mean, this person, you dramatically changed their his life.
Right.
And you know, for whatever he had the time and was able, maybe he's been thinking about it for a long time, but he finally got around to doing it and getting it off to you, and that was awesome.
Right.
But I would tell everybody, there are tons of people out there that we're all helping, probably not to that extent, but just as a general martial arts student, where, you know, they aren't saying anything, but it's the little things. It's the, you know, improvement in their relationships at school that help them with their grades. It's their relationship with their siblings, and you know, so there is so much good, and our industry is growing. Our industry doesn't grow without a lot of tremendous positive impact by all the instructors that are out there. So we want to remember that, and it's hard to forget when what you do here is when something comes up that someone's unhappy with, they're quick to bring that to your attention. And by the way, you know, if people are signed up on ongoing memberships or term memberships with auto renew, you know, people aren't coming in and saying, "I am so happy with everything, you know, please sign me up." It's the smaller percentage, that's coming in saying, you know, "I want to quit because of blank, blank, blank."
Right.
So that's what you hear, but obviously it's a small percentage.
Yeah. And you know what, also exactly what you had said too, which I find to be interesting, is that, you know, from a business point of view, you know, we're always looking at, you know, who's renewing and who's quitting and, you know, trying to keep people on par. And you're very, like you said, you very rarely hear from people that are satisfied. You know, I'd once did a seminar again for you guys where I had, you know, you draw a line across on a piece of paper. On the very far left, it says unsatisfied. The middle is satisfied. And on the very far right, it says, you know, highly satisfied. When you ask people where they are, the majority of people will say that they're in the center to a little bit further over to the right. Some people will be unsatisfied and we're going to lose them, but it's very hard to tip the scales to highly satisfied. You probably see this in Member Solutions. No matter what we do for people, clients and consulting, and you know, you bend over backwards and your checks are on time every single month. I don't think that I've ever dealt with Member Solutions and ever once had a late check ever in my entire 15 years of dealing with Member Solutions. So to me, that's what I come to expect, right? That's just what you're supposed to do. But there might be other companies out there that don't do that. But unless you've experienced it, you don't know. So I could not appreciate you guys more unless I've experienced crappy service, right?
So you're saying you're only partially satisfied?
No. I'm saying I'm highly satisfied is what I'm saying, right? But what I'm saying is that I would not know that if I wasn't in the industry to know that there are other people out there that I talk to on a regular basis that don't get that treatment.
Right.
So in other words, in a martial art context, right, is you know, here's an epiphany that I had once I paid a consultant $17,000 to come in and bring my team of 36 members to another level. It ended up being a waste of time because I did most of the stuff that he did. But anyway, long story short, we did a team building exercise where he had like the room full of my guys at the time, and he'd go, "What do you find unique about Long Island Ninjutsu Centers?" And my one guy would yell out, "We teach self-confidence," and the other guy, "Self-esteem," and lo and behold, we had 30 things on a list, and then we left and were the rah-rah-rah mentality. I happened to be in my office 2 days later, and I was a little tired, had a headache, and I closed my eyes and put my feet up and leaned back, and there was that poster board hanging on the wall. And I started reading it, and what I realized was that I bet you if he went to another school, they would pretty much hit, if there were 30 things on that board, 29 of them exactly the same. Everyone thought they were doing that same thing. Every school, if they think that they're doing a good job, would be doing the same exact thing. So what makes us unique? I looked at that and said, we're like everyone else, or at least a perception of the population that's out there believes that we're like everyone else. So we have to find the uniqueness in what we do. That leads into one last statement that I want to say about us tooting our own horn. Like, as instructors, we're humble. We don't want to say, "I'm the greatest," like Muhammad Ali used to do. We thought he had an ego, right? But he was the greatest, and he let everyone know that, so other people said that. And we don't do that. We don't toot our own horn in our school and say, you know, and educate our clientele on why we are special, why we are the greatest, why we're the best school in the area, why you're coming to us. Because then when people quit, they think they could just go somewhere else and it's the same. They think that everyone is doing exactly what you do or what I do, my students, because they have never experienced anything else. So we have to educate them in that area.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, and I know that even our clients that have come from other billing methods, they are really, you know, extremely loyal clients because they do see the difference and they do understand, wow, you know, here's all the stuff. You know, other clients where this is all they know,
right?
They don't have really an understanding as to how different we
right.
are compared to everyone else out there. And
exactly.
And the fact that we're constantly reinvesting in our business and looking for new ideas and new things,
right.
new tools. But you're right. I mean, I think it's like that with all, you know, relationship businesses. I think that's always a challenge.
Well, even relationships, right? Think about that. If you married your high school sweetheart and you don't know anything else, and it's the only person you've ever been with in your life, you have no point of reference. So it's only your imagination that brings you to, you know, what you could be doing or what you think could be doing. And that old saying, the grass is always greener on the other side, is because it's all imagination. And we don't realize, you know, so that's the same thing. If I've only been, which I have, with Member Solutions, I can assume that every other billing company is doing what you guys do. But being that I'm educated and I deal with other school owners that have dealt with other companies before, I'm aware of that Member Solutions does far and above than any other people. So I understand that. But if I didn't have that kind of conversation with school owners, I would think that it's the same. Same with martial arts schools, that Mrs. Smith, who comes in my school, probably thinks that the other school down the road does exactly what we did, perfect attendance rewards and stickers after class and mat chats and you know, private – you know, they have no other point of reference, so they don't
sure.
understand.
Well, you know, I want to take a couple minutes real quick. I'm going to unmute us here and bring in our callers, see if they have any comments or questions they'd like to ask, and then while they're asking, we'll I'm going to check on our
okay.
Web visitors. Okay,
great,
so here we
great.
Go. All right. For those of you who are on the phone, if you have any questions for Ali or comments, please, now's the time.
Anybody out there have a question?
Hey, Ali, it's well, guess who it is?
Hey, sir, I know exactly who it is. How are you, Seafood?
I'm doing good. I only
good
got the
here.
I got the email from Joe about this like maybe half an hour ago.
Oh no.
Yeah, I didn't see it at all, and I was like, "Oh, well, this is a great topic and you're definitely the person to address it." So,
I'm honored. Thank you so much.
I didn't
that.
Really have a question. I just wanted to say hi and
well,
you know,
thank you. Thank you so much. It's good to talk to you. Let's get in touch and talk you know, in private when you get a chance, maybe later on in the week or next week.
Okay, yeah, next week will be good.
That's great. Thank you. I appreciate it. Does anyone else have any questions out there? Anybody
yes,
else?
Sir.
Yes.
Yes, sir. Mark Godostik from Oregon.
Hey, how are you?
Very good, sir. And you?
Good, very good.
Wonderful.
My Jedi friend.
Yes, sir. Yeah. All right. I will see you at Celebration 5 in Florida, by the way.
I will see you there.
Let's see. Sensei, do you suggest perhaps a mat chat that includes
Absolutely.
All the parents for, like, the are you aware that we, you know, don't do this or don't do that, or that we do this and that we do that? Just
well, there's
kind of
no
refresh.
Doubt that I think that you should have many avenues of getting that information out. For example, you know, if you let's say you just pick three things of why you're special and what you want people to hear, I would send it out in an email. I would make sure that you speak to them in the lobby. I would talk to the kids about it, because we know that people are cycling information, and they're not always like that old saying, they're hearing you but they're not listening, or they're listening but they're not hearing. It's not registering. So you have to continually tell people. It's almost like saying, you know, to them, this is why we're great, or this is why we're better than that. We have to say it often for people to hear it. You know, if we say it once, we might think they've heard it, but they might not. So I would say it as much as possible. And it's not – sometimes instructors think they're bragging, but they're really not. You're just stating – you're educating. That's the difference. You have to educate your people as to why you're who you are. You know what? Having a website and having you won 50 million fights and you have X amount of trophies and you're an umpteenth degree black belt, all that stuff is meaningless. But if you spell it out the right way, people will respect you differently. right? If you let people know about the specialty and who you are as a person, what makes me want to hear about you? What makes me want to – those are the stories that I want to hear about my instructor. Does that make sense?
Yeah. You know, a couple weeks ago, I kind of got tired of parents not knowing and not – because, like, you know, I use Constant Contact and I track my emails and who opens them, who doesn't.
Right.
And so I put all the parents on the spot a couple weeks ago for each class, and I said, raise your hand if you know the answer to this question, which was found in the email.
Right.
And there was a lot of sheepish parents there, and I went and checked those emails later, and the response skyrocketed. So
yes. Well, that's always when you have response modifiers on an email where you'll say something like, check this out, dot, 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 or like, really, this is really important info, dot, dot, dot. It creates people to open the information. And this is little tricks. Like I wrote the other day, this is very interesting, and I put a little article on there, and I got a better response than I would have said, you know, please open from Kiyoshi Alley. You know, so they just wanted to hear. It's all about gossip. But that's why I say we have to educate our clientele as to what we do special and who we are and why we are so special. And I say this without ego, but if we don't do it, who's going to do it? Right? No one.
Amen.
Or our students have to do it for us, but we have to educate them on what to say so that they understand, our instructors, so that they understand why our school or our instructor or our sensei is special.
All right. Thank you very much, sir.
You're welcome. Thanks for being on the line. Any other questions?
I have one here from the web, and I'm not sure if it had come before. It might have been slightly answered, but I'll ask it anyway. Basically, you know, how do you not let the day-to-day grind wear you down? You know, so I guess what they're saying is, you know, it's okay. It's one thing to know.
I totally understand exactly what they're saying because it's hard. You know, the day-to-day grind is, you know, first off, most instructors got involved in the business probably, and you probably joke, you could verify this, by happenstance. You know, they loved what they did, their instructor recommended, all of a sudden they own a karate school, and they have no business knowledge, no education, no way understanding how to teach and the psychology of an instructor either. And now all of a sudden they find themselves dealing with people. I remember being a 17-year-old and having 40-year-olds come to me and tell me about their marriages, and I'm going like, I'm 17, why are you asking me? You know, like, I felt like I couldn't answer a lot of these questions, but then I realized that I had expertise that most of these people could have never accomplished in their 40 years, and I realized that I could help, but I had to make sure that I walked on, you know, thin ice, so to speak, because I didn't want to give them recommendations that might have hurt them, so I had to really become educated. So, but the day-to-day grind is torturous, you know, dealing with, you know, one mom a month complaining to you is okay, but dealing with a few a day, and the bigger, listen, I had up to 1,200 students, and I would be putting out fires every day. Now I kind of tailored back my schools, I'm happy, I have less locations, I'm making more money, you know, with less stress, comparatively to the larger organization. But I was always dealing with this kind of crud. I mean, there was a story where my doctor once, my actual doctor had his kid training with me, and he came up to me one day and said, you know, my kid gets his blue belt by Friday or we pull him out. You know, and I was like, I just went nuts. I kicked him out of my school, kicked this kid, took his belt away from him and said, don't ever come back. And I never went back to him as a doctor either. But I could not believe that he would threaten me. You know, being a professional, knowing that it takes time to gain some sort of expertise, a doctor of all people should never have done that to me. But it was annoying. So the day-to-day grind is tough. You have to stay centered. You have to realize that it's not personal, and you have to separate yourself from the emotion of why these people are doing what they're doing, realizing that they're doing it from ignorance. They're not ignorant in a negative way, but they're ignorant to what and how they should act. So we have to step back and separate ourselves from that emotion. But don't let it wear you down, or else you're not in the right business. It really is not a good business to be in if a lot of that stuff really hurts. And I know, I've lived it. And I had to this point where I've been open for almost 19 years, it took me a while to get to the point where it doesn't create sleepless nights and turn my stomach in knots and make me sad. Man, it's tough.
Well, you know, and it's interesting, I have one thing here, then we can kind of finish up with this, but it's more of a comment than a question, but the idea that you were, you know, that you get together with your acquaintances and kind of talk about these stories, and that's something that this client does as well, is that they'll go through and share with the staff, you know, kind of the crazy stories so that everyone who is working in the school gets an opportunity to vent. And
right.
is that something that you do purposely and, you know,
yes.
and
yeah,
you do
that
with your staff too?
Well, my staff is a different scenario because you got to be real careful with them. Some of my head instructors, I invite them to these lunches. But, yeah, like most of the school owners in my area, like today I got together with two really prominent school owners. One has 400 students. Another one has 900. And, you know, we just chat. First, it's a business thing that we're doing for our tournaments. We run tournaments in Long Island that we're bringing ourselves together to make a better tournament circuit. But after that, we just talk about the typical scenarios. And sometimes it's just good to get it out, to know that there are other people out there experiencing in the same thing. Sometimes we joke and laugh. Other times we take advice from each other. And it's pretty powerful. So I suggest to all the school owners out there to definitely, without a doubt, network with other schools and, you know, have some mentors and people that you can speak to. By the way, anybody at any time, email me if you're going through a struggle. I have a lot of my next level clients that will email me and say, hey, Allie, this is a letter I got. What would you do? And then I just give them my advice. It doesn't mean that they have to take it, but what I would do is this, this, and this. And they go, oh, that's a great idea. So just having a sounding board or being a fly on the wall of, you know, another person's issues and being able to work through them together is just imperative.
Oh, that's a great comment. And I agree. Just in any project, whether even if it's a challenge or even something that is an opportunity or something that you, an idea that you get, it's just always great to have another person, and I know that you are that person for many of our clients.
Right.
And, you know, why don't you take this opportunity now and just give out your email address, because I know you
sure.
love hearing these stories from people.
Yeah. Yeah, guys out there, you know, my email is Kyoshi, K-Y-O-S-H-I, at L-I-Ninja, L-I-N-I-N-J-A.com. That's K-Y-O-S-H-I, at L-I-Ninja.com. I'll also give you my cell phone. I gave it out. Remember, Joe, I said no one was going to call me. I gave it out. What do we have, 70, 80 schools at your boot camp? And I said, here's my cell phone. Call me for anything. Not one person call, because I know people feel funny. But you guys, do not hesitate to text message me or call me. My cell number is 631-374-6518. That's 374-6518. I'd love to hear from you guys. I mean, I would love to be able to help. And when I got involved with Member Solutions as a consultant, the majority of why I did it was to help school owners and share my experiences, and I want to continue to do that. So please, if any of you are interested, you know, just text me or email me or call me. And also check out my website at takingittothenextlevel.com. I know there are Sifu Dwight is out there. He's a client. You know, so if I could be of any help with building the business and the systems and helping you grow your school, I'd be honored to do that.
Well, and that's awesome. And, you know, and I'll further put the plug in there, but it's really from our benefit as much as it's yours, Allie, because the bottom line is clients that are part of takingittothenextlevel.com bill more billing volume with Member Solutions than those that are not part. So we certainly love your group, Allie, and the guys you're working with. They're obviously growing, and that's
yeah.
what we're all about as a company. So I'm throwing you a plug, but it's also
Thank
for
you.
Our benefit and our clients' benefit, too. I really believe that the program could help
Thanks.
A lot of people out there. And I know that you mentor in addition to being a consultant to them, which I think is the kind of the added value that makes yours very different is that, you know, you become friends and you have relationships with all your clients, and I know that's
right.
important.
Right. Thank you, Joe. I appreciate it. And I'm honored that you asked me, for one, to speak at the boot camp, and also that you actually asked me to speak about this topic, because I'm a martial artist first and, you know, a consultant second, so I'm honored that people are out there, and I'd love to, if you wanted to do a follow-up on this or some series of articles about the psychology of the martial art instructor, I'd be more than happy. So let me know.
Well, I tell you, you know, we just this week, Member Solutions had put out a new blog on our website. If everybody goes to membersolutions.com, right underneath the login button, you'll see a blog button. And you can go in there and you can see a lot of the recent articles written by the advisory team. And you mentioned one, opening a can of worms, right?
Right, opening a can of worms, right.
And that was a recent one. So I'm going to get with our team and make sure that one is posted on the blog so that for people that want a quick access to it, we'll certainly get that out there. And then for the clients on the call, look, you know, we'd love to have you go there and check it out. You can make comments on the different articles. You can submit questions to ask the advisory team at membersolutions.com, and that'll get questions out there. And if you want something directed specifically at Allie, you can always put, you know, this question's for Allie, and we'll get it routed to him. And if there's anything that you heard that you needed repeated, you can always, I'll give you a nice simple email, consulting@membersolutions.com. So if there's anything that you have and you need for Allie, because maybe you just had a typo and when you wrote it down, whatever, anything you send there will route to Allie as well. My email is joe@membersolutions.com, and I would love your comments on the blog and, of course, on any of the teleconferences. And if there's a subject that you would like, let us know, and we'll get a teleconference on that subject for you. So, you know, if you speak out, we'll listen.
Great.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. And, Allie, thank you again for taking time to help us out and help our clients.
My pleasure, always. Thanks, Joe. Thanks for everything.
You're welcome. Have a great day, everybody.
Take care, everybody. Bye.